On another exciting entry of Animation Deliberation, we have Star Wars. No, wait, sorry. We have Marvel. No, sorry. We have animation. You know what? We have Disney giving us all of the content ever made. Movies, films, news. This is going to be an amazing episode packed full of great Disney things. Right after these ads, we have no say over whatsoever.
Sing along if you know the words. A 1, 2, 3, it's time for Animation Deliberation. A conversation and a celebration of our favorite action animated series. Yeah!
Yeah!
Woo! And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Animation Deliberation. For the first time ever, as with the laughing going on by my co-hosts, I am your main host, Andrew Rogers, joined by my lovely animation compatriots, Jay Scotty. How are you doing today?
I'm too nuts. I'm good. If you've seen a certain movie we'll be discussing, you get that reference. Otherwise, just go with it.
And opposite him, we have the other chipmunk of the afternoon, Zuhair.
I didn't realize I was going to be a benched filler today, but yeah, I'm here and happy to be here.
There is some zany energy going on in the podcast, but like I said at the top, we just have a ton of things to talk about that we are super excited. And honestly, we're not even going to beat around the bush here because there is so much that we want to talk about. And I'm going to open with Star Wars because this is the biggest thing. Do you guys have any, you know, stuff you want to bring up about the news before I go full news anchor on this and just dump a bunch of information on everyone?
I mean, a lot of it, I think, is just the excitement. Obi-Wan came out this week. The first two episodes have been phenomenal, and I did a little watch of the prequels, which I enjoyed. It was not suffering at all. So between the excitement of that and it really hitting the roots of the parts of Star Wars that I really enjoy, and riding that high into more series and more talks about more Star Wars, it was just really exciting. Rogue One is arguably my favorite Star Wars movie, so being able to see Andor, the excitement of Visions from the episodes I have seen, and knowing that we're getting more of that anime love, hopefully more of a couple of the series that we were really attached to, such as The Ninth Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
And then new series that's actually animated, but covering the canon stuff with just like filler stories. Like, the sequel trilogy is what it is, but having a lot of stuff that's just directly connected to the heart of Star Wars that we love, making this strong of a presence, is something that makes me very happy.
Very cool. I just want to provide the caveat that I have been loosely paying attention to the ongoings at Celebration this week, and I really haven't had my finger on the pulse. I've watched a few trailers. I've seen the trailer for Andor. I've seen the first two episodes of Obi-Wan, which I'll just little mini review. I love 75% of it, and there's a glaring 25% for me, but I can talk about that at a later time. And then I have
the four episodes fill that up for you.
I hope so. We'll see. We'll see where it goes. But I mean, Ewan McGregor is killing it. It's great to see him back in the role. And I'm really excited for some of the other mainstays from the prequels to make their glorious return to the screen. But besides that, yeah, I've seen the trailer for Andor. I've seen the trailer for Bad Batch Season 2. I'm aware of some of the announcements, but I do not have the nitty gritty details. So hopefully, as Andrew, you present these details to us, it'll be news for me.
There was something really beautiful that I saw on Instagram today that I'll forward to you guys and we can post on the AD site. But it's when Ewan McGregor like finished being in front of everybody and everyone's just screaming and clapping and just so happy to see him because he's such a beautiful human being, just chanting, Obi-Wan, Obi-Wan. You see his face just drop and get so emotional and everyone's just waving lightsabers and Grogu dolls up in the air. It was such a beautiful sight.
Yeah, yeah. And then the last thing I want to say before I let you take over, Andrew, is just to provide the people that are tuning in, if you're just listening to the beginning of the episode, we will be covering a couple of movies after the Star Wars news, so stick around. We'll be covering the Disney Plus movie Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, as well as our little mini spoiler review for Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. So don't go anywhere after the Star Wars news.
Loopholes.
Our new favorite word. So as for the Star Wars news, I'm just going to be covering the animation because there's so much stuff that's going on outside of that. And that's kind of where the mainstay is. And also, you guys kind of got to talk about your preferences. I'm going to throw in mine. I grew up on the prequels, so I'm so excited for everything we're getting with this prequel canon. Possibly one of my favorite Star Wars things of all is just Star Wars The Clone Wars. So I love all of that canon. So I'm excited to see where this goes. So I'm going to start off with the brief news of we were finally confirmed Star Wars Visions is coming back for a second season. They did say, however, that's going to be spring of 2023. So we don't really have any other information as for the studios or trailers. That's probably going to be coming down the line. Because the two other announcements we got, first and foremost, was the trailer for Bad Batch that Jay Scotty mentioned. If you guys haven't watched that, it's currently on the Animation Deliberation story, and I retweeted the trailer as well, so you can get all of that out there. It's a phenomenal trailer. It looks like they're just upping the ante from the first season, and they've also teased one of the most underutilized characters, Goongi, the Wookiee Jedi from Star Wars, The Clone Wars. I'm so excited to see him back as a Padawan and, you know, all of these questions of more of what happened after Order 66. Obi-Wan has been great with kind of giving us more of that information. So season two is going to be awesome. And they have announced it is going to be sometime fall 2022. So you guys can definitely plan on us covering that at some point. But also, I don't know how the schedule is really going to go, because the other show that they have announced is Tales of the Jedi. Like we said, it's going to be an anthology series following a number of different characters. They have said Qui-Gon Jinn, Ahsoka, very young Ahsoka. They actually released a picture of her as a baby animated in one of the episodes. So it's going to be a very young start. Probably her meeting her master Plo Koon, as well as more Anakin Skywalker. And then the number one thing I want to see on screen, they've said Count Dooku is going to be involved. I want to see a Count Dooku Jedi story. Watch his turn to the dark side when he was studying under Yoda. That's the number one thing I want to see animated, because Dooku in the Clone Wars is one of the best characters of all time. So they have a lot that they have going on. I think they said it's going to be 8 episodes focusing on different characters. Also coming out in fall of 2022. So I don't know what this timeline looks like, how they're going to line these shows up, but it's going to be crazy with plenty of Star Wars and animation. So now that I've given our little news broadcast reel, what do you guys think of all of this? Because processing this earlier today when I saw it, I was just amazed and so excited at what's coming this year alone.
All of the content!
Was that a Wookiee growl?
Wasn't prepared to do that today. It's just, man, I love what Disney's doing with all this stuff, and it's also like slow down a little bit. I need to have time for this content, and I definitely just don't want to get burned out from it. But yeah, it's a lot, and I'm happy to have it. I'm just really happy that Disney has been listening to Star Wars fans and kind of leading things back into like what's great about it.
Yeah. I guess my biggest takeaway is the fact that we're going to have to wait as long as we have to for Star Wars Visions. I assumed that it was going to come out around the same time as season one did last year. I believe that was early November. So the fact that we're going to have to wait for it is kind of bittersweet. I fully trust Disney Plus, Disney, and the animation studios that will be involved to deliver us the highest quality product, because season one was so stellar. But we don't have a fantasy draft for the Star Wars universe like we do on the Marvel side of things.
Oh,
but
I thought about that.
Yeah, the one thing I have my fingers crossed across all these shows, whether it's Bad Batch season two, whether it's Tales of the Jedi, which I'm really excited to learn more about, or Star Wars Visions, or even some of the video games, I want Quinlan Vos. Give us more Quinlan Vos. Like you were talking about, you want that Count Dooku story. I would absolutely love to see that, but I want more Quinlan Vos. He's one of my favorite like background Jedi, and I'd love to learn more about him.
To remind me and all of the listeners, because I just had to look it up, that is the one Jedi with like the dreadlocks and the yellow like paint or tattoo across his eyes, correct? He's kind of crazy.
Correct. In his own way. Green lightsaber. I think the comics that are no longer canon, comics that are considered Star Wars legends, really fleshed out his backstory. He kind of dabbled with the dark side and was one of those, I guess, gray Jedis, for lack of a better term there. But I don't really know what his full story is in the new canon since Disney took over things, but he's a great character, and I am always a fan of a Jedi with a green lightsaber.
For sure. I mean, there's so many possibilities, and I think that's the biggest thing that I hope is we get at least one or two of the Tale of the Jedi episodes that are some more tertiary characters. You know, mm-hmm. I was actually kind of disappointed when they said there might be an episode on Anakin. Like, we have a lot mm-hmm. of Anakin out there. Let's let some True. Other stars shine. Like, Qui-Gon, let's see what his training was like.
Oh, yeah, you know, definitely.
Back before. Let's see how Obi-Wan fell in love with Satine when he was training on that planet with Qui-Gon the first time. All of those little things that they've talked about that happen off screen, this is the time to flesh those things out, really give it to us in this awesome round way.
Yeah. And I know the little bit of like the Clone Wars I've seen has done a lot to redeem some of those lesser Jedi. Like, I'm thinking of Kit Fisto specifically. Like, I love Kit Fisto. He was one of the best like background Jedi, especially in episode yes. 2 when he had that moment with 3PO where he did the force blast on 3PO and then gave that smile like straight to the camera. And he was just taken out like such a punk in episode 3. So I'd love to see him in all his glory have a great story as well.
Oh, Liam Neeson and his son are both going to be part of the show.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, that is one thing that I didn't mention because there were so many articles. They have said a lot of the original voice cast is trying to come back. Okay. I actually think even in Bad Batch specifically, Ian McDiarmid sounded like he was behind Palpatine in that trailer, which
he
is,
did.
Yeah, so that's awesome because in a lot of the Clone Wars, there were different voice actors that came in to do that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So having the original voice cast is great. However, other complete, not even news, but I saw this on Twitter about 20 minutes ago. It was a quote from some other actor on the Star Wars shows that says, apparently, allegedly here, Dee Bradley Baker will do the lines in one take with all of the characters. So he will do a scene in Bad Batch, just jumping between the voices. And that just gets so much more credit to him as a voice actor, if that is a true statement, because how could you manage a conversation between Tech, Echo, I can't even think of all their names here off the top of my head.
Tech, Echo, Crosshair.
Hunter. It's not Heavy.
Oh, what's the big guy's name? Dang. What is the big guy's name? Shame. For shame.
This is what happens when we don't have notes, listeners. It's just this.
I mean, I never come with notes, so.
Well, either way, the fact that he can do that, I just wanted to throw out there before we got into it. Wrecker, you were right. You were right. We're going to have to bleep him, I'm sure, but he was right.
That's funny because his helmet's my favorite, too.
It is, yeah. He's got that iconic helmet for sure.
And, you know, this is why I'm excited, and we're definitely going to talk plenty more about this later on when it comes up. But Zuhair, watch that trailer. They do a costume overhaul, and I love when animated shows change these kinds of things. We're past the days of Scooby-Doo where it's always the same outfit.
The one thing I'll say about Dee Bradley Baker's performance and knowing that he's going to do that like single take like that is just impressive. Most impressive.
It's even more impressive after listening to Nina talk about in Duncanville how Amy Poehler like switches between two voices because she's the son and the mom. And there's a lot of times where she's just having conversations with herself. So like, I don't like her explaining all of that just has me thinking about it a lot more and just a lot more appreciation for him being five versions of himself and it's not extra stormtroopers or clone troopers.
And more because he does Rex, he does Cody, he does all the extras. Like,
yeah. Yeah, it makes me think of Billy West because I've been rewatching Futurama as kind of like the show that I fall asleep to. And I know Billy West did so much of the heavy lifting in that show. There's like entire sequences where it's just him performing all the characters because he does Dr. Farnsworth, Fry, Dr. Zoidberg, Zap Brannigan, so many. So, yeah. Dee Bradley Baker's right up there with him.
That is a diverse grouping of characters, too. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, I believe that is all I had in the realm of Star Wars news. Okay. Who would like to lead us into our next topic?
Just quickly before we transition to the next topic, I do want to encourage our listeners, if you have feedback regarding all this Star Wars news, if there's news that we didn't cover that you're excited for and you're really anticipating some of this animated content in the galaxy far, far away, let us know at animationdeliberationpodcast@gmail.com or any of our social medias.
Well, isn't that a great transition to the feedback that leads into the next topic we're covering?
Sweet.
Woo!
So we got an email from Andre Spark saying, "Hey guys, just wanted to let you know if you wanted to see a cool mix of animation with live action, watch the new Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers on Disney Plus. It reminds me of Roger Rabbit and Looney Tunes. Great void cast too. Keep up the good work, Andre."
Yeah, so Andre's emails have inspired us to cover the two movies that we'll be covering on today's episode. So first and foremost, as you mentioned, Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers. The I don't even want to call it a reboot.
It's not a reboot.
It's not a reboot. It's like a continuation.
Well, no, I think that was the tag on one of the posters was like, it's not a reboot or something like that. They were making the big joke that they were specifically doing something different this time.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the comparison to Roger Rabbit, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, is the perfect comparison, because when I've been like describing this movie to people or recommending it to people, I really just have to call it like a spiritual successor to Who Framed Roger Rabbit. And they even feature Roger Rabbit in the movie. So it's one
with
of
the original
where...
voice actor.
Nice. Yeah, yeah, that's correct. Do you have that gentleman's name?
Oh, I shouldn't have said it.
Oh, I want to say it's like Fleischman, somebody Fleischman, but I should know. But anyway, it is very much like picking up the torch that Who Framed Roger Rabbit had and having, you know, what's so funny?
It was Charles Fleischer. That was the
name. Charles Fleischer. Okay.
I didn't want to interrupt you, but Zuhair saw me just waiting patiently.
Yeah, we had like that. There was like a gentle pause and Andrew put his finger up and then you just kept going. So he just went.
That's great. I didn't pick up on it. I'm looking at you guys on the screen too, and I somehow missed that.
He just went from satisfaction to disappointment so quick as he started talking.
Yeah. There are some days I really wonder if we should release the video of this stuff because it's comical.
Yeah, Charles Fleischer, put some respect on that name. But anyway, as I was saying, yeah, it's definitely a passing of the torch where the animated characters coexist with live action actors, and it's like they are actors living in the real world, working as actors, working on a soundstage. It's incredibly self-aware, full of cameos, full of references. And I feel like this was just like the perfect movie for my generation that like grew up with classic Disney animation, then transitioned to the age of the internet, the age of the meme, the age of the reboot, the requel. And I knew with the talent involved that this was going to be a funny and enjoyable movie, but I could not have anticipated how thoroughly I enjoyed it and just how mature it was at some points in time. It's like fun for the entire family. I don't care what age you are, you will have fun with this film.
And I don't even know if fun's always the word, because there was the point they were kind of talking about like what was basically trafficking, and I was like, is this still a kid's movie? Like they
yeah. I was about to say, one of the scenes that got me was with, I mean, I'm only halfway through the movie, sorry guys, but I was, the movie with Flounder really got me, because I was like, oh, yeah. Look at the Little Mermaid character, oh no, they're like, we erase his mouth, and then ship him off, and so I was like, oh my god, you poor guy.
Yeah, but at the same time, we talk about it being a spiritual successor, and I remember Roger Rabbit also being that dark. They were scared of, I can't remember what the goop that Christopher Lloyd as Judge Doom was trying to dip them in, but you were terrified to watch your cartoon characters get sucked into that goopy mess, whatever it was. Like, that was a kind of scary movie, and I remember the end of it even being frightening as a kid with Judge Doom getting flattened by the steamroller. It reminded me a lot of ways of, wow, they're doing this in a way that it's not adult, but it's not kid. It's kind of for everyone, and
right.
It was awesome because of that.
Yeah, yeah. Who Framed Roger Rabbit was definitely full of innuendos and was very mature at sometimes. But the other takeaway from it that I think it shares in common with this movie is the fact that it is like a noir, like a classic caper. Like, it is a story about a hard-boiled detective like finding out what happened to these cartoons. And the movie is very much a spiritual successor in that regard as well. This is Chip and Dale, the actors, having to actually step into the shoes of the characters they played in the show and actually, you know, find out what happened to their friend Monty and try to save him from a middle-aged Peter Pan of all people, which is kind of meta in itself too, because if you know anything about the story behind the actor that provided the voice as well as modeled Peter Pan, he had a very sad story. So there's sometimes where it's like, was this in poor taste? But it's kind of like Disney acknowledging some of their own shortcomings in the land of Hollywood and some of the ways they mistreated some of their talent in the past.
The thing with the excess merch was pretty funny too. It's like, you remember Shrek body soap? Of course you don't. Nobody does.
Funniest thing is, I do. I remember it. I remember those weird bottles, and you were like, why are they shaped like Shrek?
Like, that doesn't sound like it would smell good. Like, yeah, I smelled like Shrek today. Okay, back up!
Yeah. Well, again, with the, like, Roger Rabbit comparisons, like, I know one of the things that was really monumental about Who Framed Roger Rabbit is the fact that they got Bugs Bunny and Mickey Mouse to appear on screen for, like, the first time ever. And the deal behind that was is that they both had to have the exact amount of screen time in order for both studios to agree to it. So that's why they were in that sequence together falling, and they both enter and exit the screen at the same time. But I am thoroughly impressed with how many different studios they got to cooperate with them to have all these various cameos. Like, this is a Disney movie, but we have Warner Brothers Batman showing up. We've got Shrek. We've got DreamWorks characters. We've got E.T. Like,
I think Seth Rogen joke was the one that was like, holy crap, they got Seth Rogen from every property he's ever been in. And just, that's DreamWorks, that's Sony, that's everything.
Yeah.
I don't know if Zuhair's gotten to that, but...
No, I haven't. That's why I'm fascinated right now. Because, like, you know me, like, I don't look up voice actors before all this, right? So the only thing that's, like, really stood out to me is the fact that Andy Samberg was the narrator and he plays Dale. So I was like, oh, that's really cool. Like, one of my favorite actors is in this. And I was locked in on that. But there's voices where it's, like, I'll recognize, but I don't exactly know, like, what the person's name is. So just, I don't know. Hearing that was really cool.
Oh, yeah. On that note, this voice cast is star-studded. We've got Andy Samberg as Dale, John Mulaney doing a fantastic job as Chip, really kind of playing a different part from a lot of roles I've seen him in, because a lot of people will recognize him as Spider-Ham from Into the Spider-Verse, but he's playing the straight man in this film where he's entirely wacky as Spider-Ham. Who else? Eric Bana is the voice as Monterey Jack. Will Arnett does the voice of Peter Pan as Sweet Pete.
Is that Will Arnett? That's funny.
Yeah,
and you can't forget the hated character with a mustache, as always, J.K. Simmons.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My God, when he used his little Play-Doh hand to get the fingerprint and just sliced it off and turned it
into hell. Oh, right. Yeah.
Is there anything on her back? Yeah, pencil and officer, whatever the bird's name was.
O'Hara.
She's just in there shaking on the steps.
Yeah.
I think that was the best part about the movie, is it was so self-aware. They went ahead and took those jokes, and it didn't feel like they were forcing any of them. They were just like, these jokes make sense. We're going to tell them anyway. And it was hilarious and awesome. And I enjoyed it way more than I thought I was going to be honest. Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, I guess we'll cover this movie. And then I sat there laughing the whole time.
Yeah.
So I am still a little bit in that boat where it's one of those, because... Jay Scotty, I don't know, did you watch this just because you, like, had time to watch it one day, or was this one you were, like, really looking forward to?
No, I was looking forward to it anyway, but I didn't really go into it with, like, the craziest expectations, but once I sat down and started watching it, I was like, oh my goodness, I am loving this, we're definitely going to have to cover this, because as much as, you know, we cover animation, we kind of specialize in action animation, but that's another thing I really have to praise this film for, is, like, there are some really solid moments of action, and the way the animated characters interact with the real world and real world props, I was super impressed with. Like, you bring up J.K. Simmons' Putty character when he's having that fight with Kiki Lane's detective character. That was thrilling, the way they take a stop motion character and have it interact with a live action actor. And I love the homage to Terminator 2 when he, like, slides under the door, and even when she uses the fire extinguisher to, like, freeze dry him and crack him, and that's ultimately his undoing. Just really impressive all across the board.
Oh, for sure. And you know, as you're talking about these amazing scenes and amazing characters, I can't not laugh at what happens in the climax, and I need to give some credit to one of our listeners, Sarah Day. She was responding on our Instagram story when I put up all the stuff about Chip and Dale, and she just said how much she loved this movie, how great the action was, the animation, and then she said one line that we've somehow beat around this entire time.
Okay.
Holy crap, ugly Sonic.
Yes.
How they got that character in this movie, how they brought him back, the slow motion with the human teeth. There was so much, and it was so meta, and I'm pretty sure there was Werewolf Sonic on the wall behind him from a bad video game from the early 2000s. It was just how did they pull this off? How did they do
it? I just like to think that they already had, like, so much of this animated that they were like, we need to salvage the time put into this somehow. Like, let's get a little bit of money back and just lease off, like, whatever workings we have of it or whatever modelings we have of it and hope that it works.
Well, they didn't take the exact model that we saw. So for anybody that doesn't know, I'm sure most people know, but when the Sonic movie was first coming out, they released this trailer that was very, very poorly received because the version of Sonic they had was downright frightening with the human features. It was just weird and unsettling, which that's another thing I really like. The fact that they made the Uncanny Valley like an actual physical location.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Being in California, we always have references to the valley, but the fact that they made it the Uncanny Valley, I love that as a meta joke. But yeah, they bring back Sonic and they call him Ugly Sonic. Like, he's a different character from regular Sonic. He's like, oh, you want to go fast? That's Sonic's thing. Ugly Sonic goes slow. And it wasn't the exact same model. He had a lot of the same features, including human teeth, but they definitely made him a little bit uglier. Like, his snout was more upturned and he looked a little older and world weary, but I loved everything about Ugly Sonic. Yeah,
I wasn't ready for that.
And as you talk about the Uncanny Valley, the scene before that was just hilarious to me. Them getting like an off-brand Muppet to sell cheese and like be the runner, that there was just so many fun things that I was laughing. I was waiting for Ratatouille or Remy from Ratatouille to show up eating a bunch of cheese.
Oh, yeah.
That was the one thing I was half expecting. But yeah, this.
What kind of cheese do you like? It's like stinky cheese? You guys cops?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was Keegan-Michael Key doing the voice of that chef, by the way.
Oh, was it? That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, they really had some talent. And we're talking about all these various forms of animation. I feel like that's another area we've kind of glossed over. But we have Chip and Dale, and one of the like funniest inside jokes in the movie is the fact that Dale undergoes what's called CGI surgery, which is the equivalent of like cosmetic plastic surgery. So you've got one of them as one of these like updated photorealistic three-dimensional computer-generated characters, while Dale is still like classically cell-shaded and stop motion characters, puppet characters, CGI characters, all working with live action actors. And it's just seamless. It's really, really well done and sold and just hilarious all the way through.
And then after that, when Chip was watching TV and it was Alvin and the Chipmunks, and it was like, of course they rap now. And then it had me thinking that that movie came out on the same day as, it was either Infinity War or Endgame. It had like one of the biggest tanks in cinematic history, like cinema release history.
Oh my.
So it was just a fun reminder of that on top of it.
Yeah. They bring Alvin and the Chipmunks back, I think, towards the end of the movie.
Oh, do that?
Yeah, Sweet Pete says, I preferred Alvin and the Chipmunks. And Chip's like, you monster.
And you talk about all of these different forms, and the Uncanny Valley specifically, there were very few moments that I was ever taken out by the animation. They did such a flawless job of incorporating these characters no matter what the medium was, and I fully believed it, same as it was back during Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which I would argue was easier almost to overlay your drawings on film as opposed to having to edit in six different kinds of mediums of animation on top of digital. I think they did a really, really good job. And obviously that's why we're here, is to talk about like animation in a way. And they killed it with all the work that they put in. You could tell this was a work of love out of people who used to enjoy Chip and Dale, and
definitely
also the meta people in Hollywood that said, oh, let's make a movie with all of our little jokes, like Baloo making a comeback, singing jazz. Like,
yeah,
I really like that. It's like, we're going to be up on stage one day, but I was just so happy to see Baloo. That I think the incorporation that you were talking about really did throw me off at the beginning, because I was just like overanalyzing it, like trying to get my brain to process what I was watching. I haven't seen a trailer or anything for this either. I think I only saw that one poster about the sequel that you referred to, and then the countless amount of posts saying like, why didn't anyone tell me it's going to be this good? It's like, well, it's been out barely 24 hours, so who the hell would have told you that? But anyways, like, yeah, it did throw me off a little bit, like when they were getting out of the car. And then that was another thing, is they had a lot of like the cars from Cars. Like, there was a few that were animated just like that, with the eyes and everything. Right. I think a couple of the cop cars were like that. But especially like when Dale was like shoving his face with the nuts and everything, and like it took my brain a little time to process. Like, this is, it's it's a little janky right now. Mm. And it really was. And it's overall, it was very impressive how they took so many different types of looks and just brought it into one live action movie.
Yeah, the director, Akiva Schaffer, he's part of like the Lonely Island quartet, which makes sense, nice. You know, given Andy Samberg's involvement. But he's just been firing on all cylinders for me. He has this like brand of humor that just really works for me. Some of his other films were Hot Rod is one of my favorite, just like dumb throw on yes. for some laugh movies. But then his last film before this one, which I think was like criminally underrated, was Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping, which has Andy Samberg in the lead again. And it, like, if you haven't seen that one, I highly recommend you go back and check that out. But,
yeah, and he actually made a cameo himself as
the director
of the Chip and Dale show, that he dressed himself strikingly like a young Steven Spielberg.
He did.
I figured that's what the illusion had to have been in that moment.
Yeah. And then, yeah, just kind of thinking about what we haven't touched on as far as the voice cast goes. I loved like this subversion of expectations with Zipper's voice being Dennis Haysbert. Most people probably know him from the Allstate commercials.
Allstate guy.
Yeah.
That's all I was thinking. I was like, why is he trying to sell me insurance right now?
Yeah.
I think that was the only thing I was surprised at, how underused him and Gadget.
You got it right. Gadget.
Yeah, I was surprised how they weren't more in the movie. I was expecting them to come back a little earlier than they did.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that was probably better in the long run of really making us care about that relationship between Chip and Dale. And they did a really good job of bringing it back around of, all right, why should we care what happened after they broke up and all these other things? They really made it wholesome and rounded, and that's a big thing for me, is make me care about your characters, and they did a good job.
Yeah. And as wholesome as it was also not afraid to make some like really mature jokes. Like even in the beginning, they make the Chip and Dale like stripper joke. And then Stan Marsh, a South Park character, had a little cameo in the sauna scene.
Which, you talk about the Chip and Dale dancer joke. Did you happen to notice that it kind of looked like that was the show that Dale was a guest star on? Is all of the co-guys that he was like, hey, we should go out and get drinks. They all were shirtless with bow ties under their robes. And they were like, oh, you were the joking cameo. So he may have shown up in a strip show as a cameo for Chip and Dale dancers.
It was definitely implied, yes.
It took me a minute and I was like, wait a second.
Yeah, or the fact that all of like Gadget and Zipper's offspring were like mashups of mice and fly. It was just like they didn't have to do that, but they went there.
And there was a lot of them.
Yeah, there were tons, like 43, I want to say, something like 43 and counting.
And that one has her nose, and that one has his eyes.
Yeah. Yeah. So if you've listened to us, you know, gush about this movie at this point and you still haven't watched it, just I highly recommend it. Check it out. There's going to be a reference for you. It's one of those ones you could really go through with a fine-tooth comb. There are so many things going on in the background, so many references. Even like some of the fictional movies we haven't even brought up. Like I'm excited for Meryl Streep's Mr. Doubtfire now. That needs to be a thing.
Batman vs. E.T. That's, you know, that's got to be the vote in there.
E.T. forgives Bat. Fine.
Boy. I was disappointed they didn't let Will Arnett do that scene. That was the one thing I was like, come on, give him his moment.
Yeah, because we had our Lego Batman voicing the villain.
Yeah, hashtag renew Lego Batman.
There you go.
Don't say that one enough, but they canceled that movie far too soon.
Was there supposed to be a sequel that got canceled?
Yeah, they had one in the works, and then Lego got weird with its rights to movies, and they're like, all right, no more Lego Batman.
That's lame.
It is.
I didn't know that. But...
No, that's old news. We're here for the new stuff.
The new.
All right.
Any final thoughts on Chip and Dale?
No, like I said, go watch this movie if you guys haven't. I went in pretty low on the horizon, and I came out as high as you've heard me this whole time.
Well, I guess the last thing I'll say is Chip and Dale, Rescue Rangers. All right, on to Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness. So I know Andre's sending another email.
Yeah, let's jump in with that.
That he did. Hey, guys, spoiler alert. I don't know if you noticed, but when they were going through the multiverse, one of those verses was definitely Spider-Verse. It's definitely a blink and you'll miss it. Thought it was cool. Keep up the good work, Andre. Oh, we did not miss it. We got very excited because Lou Pulse.
There's animation and CGI. We're just going to say we could talk about that now because we've interviewed a pre-visualization artist. So it all counts under our umbrella now.
Yeah. And with that spoiler out of the way, there is actually a sequence when Doctor Strange is flying through the multiverse with America Chavez that they are 100% fully animated. I'll save my thoughts on whether or not I think it is actually the Spider-Verse verse or what have you. I guess it's ultimately is connected to Spider-Verse because they're both dealing with the multiverse.
Yeah.
But Andrew, you let us know off air that you had some opening thoughts that you wanted to kind of lead the conversation with.
Go for it, Joy Kill.
So, yeah. All right. I'm going to be blunt with all of our listeners out there. I didn't love this movie. It wasn't a bad movie by any means, but there was a lot of things with the plot, with the characters, with Zuhair wants to stop me. Go ahead.
You didn't love it for MCU standards or as an enjoyer of film standards? Because that is a very big difference.
I
think some of the lesser MCU movies are still like some of the decent regular movies. And yeah. I feel like that's a very important standard.
So for sure. In terms of MCU, it's lower. In terms of actual film, it has a lot of good things. And that's where I'm going to go is, you know, I didn't love the plot. I didn't love a lot of the effects. And I didn't love the characters and the acting. And those are my own personal opinions. And I know this is a very divisive movie because of that. However, I think it's got one of the best scores that I've ever heard, and I'm going to pop off about the music, don't you all worry, as well as the camera work, the direction. Sam Raimi did a great job. And I just wanted to be blunt with everyone because I'm not going to take away from these guys as they talk about this stuff. I'm just going to stay quiet. But the biggest thing I wanted to open with this is this movie reminded me a really great thing, and I want to be thankful for this podcast network and remind all of our listeners, everyone's allowed to have opinions because Zuhair and I talked for like 2 hours after the movie came out. We had a call and he was surprised by a lot of my stuff. And I listened to the MCU cast and almost every single one of my things that I complained, like, oh, I didn't like this scene. I didn't like this character. I didn't like this actor. They were glowing with reviews about all of those things. And it reminded me, we are all allowed to have these different opinions. And it was really cool to listen and see, oh, this is why they liked that. I still don't, but that's really cool that they can do that. And I just want to be thankful that we have such a welcoming network that we are allowed to have a conversation and a deliberation as opposed to an argument on these topics. So if you guys think I'm quiet or anything like that, or too over the top, or like, oh no, I disagree, I just wanted to let everyone know, I know these two love the movie. I didn't, I'm going to sing different praises as it goes, but it was just a cool thing that this network taught me. We can all have different opinions, and I think that's so, so cool.
Nerd.
No.
What?
No, it was, no,
just
no,
I had that monologue prepared, and you're just gonna shut me down.
In all seriousness, I echo a lot of your sentiments there, Andrew. It is great to be able to have, you know, the namesake of the show, a deliberation rather than an argument. I will be curious to hear a little more specifically what some of your gripes are with the movie in terms of like specific performers, performances, and some of the, you know, story plot points that didn't work for you and whatnot. But yeah, I'll just go ahead and say like this movie is a solid 9 for me. I love the first Doctor Strange, but one of my kind of, I guess, expectations for it is that I wanted to go more balls to the wall. And I feel like as much as like Scott Derrickson did a great job, I was a little relieved when I heard that he stepped away for creative differences, because bringing somebody in like Sam Raimi, like not only is he a seasoned veteran with like Spider-Man under his belt, as well as like tons of horror movies, including the Evil Dead trilogy, he's just not afraid to like really push the envelope. And I like, that was one of my favorite things about this movie, is that it really was the MCU's first horror film. And I'm a big horror buff myself. So the body horror, Wanda was absolutely terrifying. The zombie stuff was comical, but also unsettling. yeah, I guess if I did have like one, the reason it's a 9 for me rather than a 10 is being called the Multiverse of Madness. I wish we got to spend a little bit more time in some of the verses. Like when we flew through with America Chavez and Doctor Strange and got to see so many, it just happened so quickly for me. I've actually seen the movie in theaters 3 times now, and it's still like, I feel like every time I'm watching that sequence, I'm like trying to like pay attention to something, but it happens so fast and it kind of picks up exponentially, especially towards the end. I thought the second act maybe spent a little bit too much time in the, I think it's the 838 verse, the one with the Illuminati and whatnot, but I was so glad not to have been spoiled going into this one, because it has just some stellar cameos. I wanted to get up and scream and shout when John Krasinski appeared as Reed Richards, because that's been fan casted for so long. I don't know if he'll ever show up as the character again, and if he doesn't, I'm completely fine with that. But getting that moment in the theater was so, so thrilling for me.
Oh yeah. I mean, how could you not actually want to jump up and shout? And like, this is where I will make one of my few jokes here. I was with some non-MCU friends. They almost left when they said the word Illuminati. They were like, this movie's a joke. Why is the Illuminati here? And they were ready to be done. I was like, no, you don't understand. This is a big deal from comics. And it was
they were thinking like the real world conspiracy.
Yeah, they were like, oh, this movie's going into conspiracy theories. But okay, and it was funny. Just so many of those little things that I was like, wow, I never would have thought of that before.
Yeah. Zuhair, what are you thinking?
I mean, I just enjoyed the movie overall. If I had to go on a whelm scale, I was definitely above whelmed. It wasn't, I mean, it had overwhelming moments, but definitely above whelmed. I like that. I think that's going to be my new rating system. Yeah, I'm going to go with above whelmed. It was really good, well-paced. I am just tired of multiverse and time travel. I want more grounded stuff. Hell, I'll take the space stuff over just controversial stuff, I guess, because it's like I said, it's like I have no issues with the content. I've just been having issues with fans lately. And that's just one of those things. It's like, well, they said this and they said it worked like this. And I was like, it's all made up. Enjoy what you're getting.
Right.
So
all made up and the points don't matter.
Nice reference there. All right, Drew Carey.
The fantasy, you said points, but like all the fantasy stuff has been, oh, it's a lot. It's a lot of emails.
Oh,
it's
sure.
A lot of controversy. Check out the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast. We had it did a whole episode of where me, Sarah, Dave, Matt, and Jeff are updating the points, and he was heated. It was a lot, and we got a lot more to go. I mean, with all the multiverse stuff and how much people wanted it with Spider-Man 2, the only thing that I wish I got, which I'm not mad that we didn't, is I want to see a live action Jake Johnson, like tubby and everything, in a Spider-Man suit. Like, that's all I've been asking for, and that's all I need. And now that we have this little taste that like Doctor Strange went through the Spider-Verse part of the multiverse, is like, it's still a possibility.
No doubt.
So yeah,
no doubt.
I mean, overall the movie was great. It was a lot of fun, great action, great story, well paced. I just personally miss most of the more of the grounded stuff, but man, I wish that Sam Raimi could have done Thor Ragnarok. I feel like it would have been such a better movie with it.
Ooh, shade thrown towards Ragnarok. I like Ragnarok a lot, but I can, in retrospect, I can kind of agree with some of the more like heartbreaking moments being played for laughs, and that really not having the gravity that it should have in the great in the grand scheme of things. But I did want to make reference to that that stream that you mentioned that you and Sarah Day were on with the Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast. I caught part of that live.
Yeah, watching that live.
Yeah, so I saw some of the controversy there, and it makes sense that a lot of that was around the character of Wanda, because that's another thing I was so glad I wasn't spoiled about. Like, I think when the movie's plot was first announced, it kind of made sense that Wanda was going to be the big bad, but I didn't expect her to be the big bad right out of the gate.
Yeah, or for her to be
as vengeful as she was. And that's like, when I say she was terrifying, it was just like, yeah, Elizabeth Olsen like absolutely killed it, like with her delivery. Like, this is me being reasonable. Everything I've done up to this point is being reasonable.
Yeah. And
if you don't surrender America Chavez right now, it won't be me that comes for her. It'll be the Scarlet Witch. Whew. Terrifying stuff. And I'm really glad for Elizabeth Olsen. She's been playing this character for so long, to get to kind of like tap into a different gear. It was really, really satisfying for me. But we made a lot of mention to America Chavez as well. I will say, I was discussing with friend of the show, Haley Hobb from the Source Pages podcast, our sibling podcast there. They did their review, and one of her big takeaways that I entirely agree with is, I think the introduction of America Chavez, I think, is my favorite of these quote unquote young Avengers that we've gotten. I think I'm not going to be able to pronounce the actress's name, but I think it's Xochitl Gomez. I apologize if I'm not getting that correct, but she had a really heartwarming and heartfelt performance for me. And the fact that she's that young and holding her own with like veteran actors like Benedict Cumberbatch, Benedict Wong, Elizabeth Olsen, it was really, really impressive to me.
I was not ready for your artwork. With running naked from a clown. It just threw me off when I was scrolling through it. I was like, this is brilliant.
Especially knowing you're scared of clowns that you did that.
A little bit of insight into me, yeah. So I did do a cartoon. It's on the Animation Deliberation Instagram as well as my own Instagram. But as soon as I heard Wong say the line, when they're talking about dreams being these windows into our multiversal selves, so he says, so somewhere out there, I have this recurring dream of being chased by a clown while naked. And she's like, yep, it's out there somewhere. The second I heard that, I just imagined Pennywise from It chasing Wong naked. So I had to do the cartoon. And I have a kind of funny history with It. I was very young when the 90s television movie came out, and I walked into the living room when I was supposed to be in bed while my parents were watching it, and was absolutely scarred and had to return to my bed, in which I had a life-size Bozo the Clown pillow that I had to sleep with. So it was nightmare fuel for me for the better part of like the next 8 years. And then finally I watched it again as like when I was 18, and was like, kind of had to just laugh at myself about being that scared of that, because it's kind of cheesy. I mean, Tim Curry is rightfully creepy and unsettling. But when the 2017 version came out, I found myself like actually weirdly excited for it. And I really, really enjoyed that first chapter. The second chapter, I'll just say, I think was a little bloated and unwieldy. But Bill Skarsgård as Pennywise is definitely one of the highlights. So it's kind of been a story journey for me, going from being absolutely terrified of Pennywise to being like somewhat fascinated by Pennywise. Yeah, that's my story. And I'm sticking to it.
Well, I'll go off about the music now if we have a nice pause.
Oh, yeah, please.
I think this is one of the best score, one of, if not the best scored Marvel movies. I am not counting Thor Ragnarok and the Guardians movies, because those are not really scored movies. Those are soundtracked movies, in my opinion.
Okay.
Just because those are popular music. All of the orchestral notes were beautiful throughout. They had you feeling emotions every time. Like, they just had these grand sweeping things as the doors open for the Illuminati. And then all of the sprinkles of little notes, the WandaVision, when it was like, oh, I know a witch. I got chills down my spine. The original X-Men theme playing during Professor X's introduction.
Yeah.
And then the fact that they brought in, I believe it was, what, Beethoven's fifth, the famous dun-dun-dun-dun during the fight between the two Stranges. That whole time, my mind was just reeling through the music and this catalog of greatness that they put it all into these scenes so perfectly that it didn't ever take me out, and I was just listening to the music, but it was still so noticeable in a way that it was beautifully done. Danny Elfman just absolutely killed it, and that was the one thing I distinctly remembered walking out of the theater, was I need to listen to this soundtrack, because they did it was a stellar job across the board. I would dare say John Williams level of composing. I mean, no one will ever beat him, and Star Wars period ever fight me.
that's interesting, because I've been, little quick aside here, I've been doing some coverage of the Jurassic Park films on Binger's Assemble, Matthew Carroll and Karen Hufstetler. And we kind of like talked about how, as great as Star Wars is and as iconic as it is, I dare say that maybe the Jurassic Park theme might be the most like,
well, I'm not just saying memorable. The theme, I'm saying the whole movie. Like, if you watch Kenobi, there's so many of those notes that have been picked out of just the Williams scores over the years.
Sure.
That Star Wars as a whole, like when they're flying spaceships, they have those beautiful moments where it's just complete overtures going on in the background. You're like, you didn't need to do this much this hard. The actual themes, I think, are definitely up for debate because there's great themes out there. But sure. I'm just talking score in general for this movie. All the others, they were just, it was amazing across the board. And I couldn't not come on here and talk about it because at this point, yeah. I think I'm just kind of the music guy on all of our shows. I point out music. So I'm just going to keep doing that because my musical theater background just loves it sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay, hey, just we could have an episode of just the two of you with Ashley Coffin talking about music, and that could go on for hours.
Yeah.
Because that's sure. Again, that's one of those things I just never paid attention to. But when I first started talking to her after we met, like the conversation came up, and I was just having paragraphs and paragraphs and paragraphs of messages from her, just so passionately talking about stuff like that. And I'm just like, I kind of appreciate my ability to just get sucked in and not think about who makes the stuff during, but at the same time, like, I feel like I'm missing out on a lot too and not respecting people's names and talents. And yeah. I kind of need to immerse myself in it a little more than I do.
Yeah.
But the argument is to be made, a good score is meant to be a supporting piece to the everything going on the screen. It's only supposed to be when they take it away that you notice something wasn't there. So
right.
I would almost argue better scores are ones that you don't notice as much, but there are the good ones that those of us who appreciate music are just going to notice immediately anyhow. So I don't think you're in the minority. I would honestly say you're probably in the majority talking about music being ignored.
It's not even ignored. It's like, I know good music and I know immersive music when I hear it. I just don't make the effort to find out like who composed it, if that makes sense.
No, I agree with what Andrew's saying about, you know, a proper score kind of immerses you into it. And I definitely give you credit, Andrew. You've done a much better job of like paying attention to the score when it comes to especially like the animated series that we cover. But I do pride myself as a bit of a, you know, cinephile, and I appreciate the score. So with that in mind, I don't want this to sound as I'm going to sound like a jerk no matter what. But just a quick correction to something you said. You said Thor Ragnarok and Guardians weren't scored. While they do feature like popular music in their soundtrack, they actually were scored. I know Tyler Bates did the score for Guardians of the Galaxy, both of them, and then Mark Mothersbaugh actually did of Devo fame did the score for Thor Ragnarok. And it's one of my favorite things to do on Spotify. I'll just bring up, you know, score composers and whatnot and listen to their scores, and a lot of times the ones for the MCU will come up. But I think Danny Elfman did a fantastic job, as much as Michael Giacchino had an iconic theme with the first one. What really stood out to me in this film was the use of piano, especially to deliver some of those horrifying moments with Wanda, and then the electric guitar. Like, I think when the electric guitar just kind of does like single notes when Strange is doing his dream walking into the corpse, and then at the end of the film when his third eye emerges and they just do like, wow, as it's like just he's writhing in pain, and then you just see this eyeball emerge on his forehead. Just, really, really satisfying.
Oh, yeah, it was.
So he was trying not to be a jerk, but I took a lot of satisfaction, Andrew, having a monologue and then being corrected that hard, because I get that all the time.
And I can back it up, because that was more of a caveat statement, because the minute I said to people, this has one of the best Marvel scores, they're like, how could you ever say that against Guardians? I'm like, you're thinking of Mr. Blue Sky, which is a great song, but is not the Guardians score. Because like Ragnarok, they have amazing the synths throughout that movie. They do a phenomenal job with that 80s feel. But most people, when they think of Ragnarok, think of Immigrant Song and the fight on bridge. And I'm like, that's not what I mean when I'm talking about these great things going on and off the screen. So it was a caveat, and I appreciate you correcting that, because some people may have taken it the wrong way, which I didn't even realize.
Yeah. I appreciate you being so understanding, and I really was trying not to come across as a jerk. So I'm always open to correction myself. That's the thing, we're doing this live, we have some notes prepared, but it is like you're kind of going out on a limb when you decide to put something out on the air and speak so passionately about something. You're not always going to be right. I know I've said people's names wrong, I've misquoted things, and I listen back sometimes, I'm absolutely doing face palms and whatnot, but it's not that serious. We don't take it too seriously, as we say in our tagline.
If I have watched something once, I do not have notes, just as listeners know that.
And no, I was going to say, if I'm going to correct you all, I expect everyone to keep me accountable. I'm waiting for the day that a listener writes in and just says Andrew was wrong in the email subject. So, like, it's going to happen at some point, and I appreciate us all keeping each other honest. I think that's part of what makes this show good, is because we're three kind of amateurs that are doing this at a high level, which is awesome.
Yeah, for sure. Well said. One other thing I want to bring up, just talking about that end sequence where his third eye emerges, definitely made me think of the introduction of a character that I have been waiting for with bated breath, being a big Doctor Strange fan, and that was Clea. And that was another thing I was so glad not to have spoiled for me, the fact that Charlize Theron is going to be our Marvel Cinematic Universe Clea, and just having her show up on the end. She had what looked like a energy beam sword from Halo to me, and just cutting into the very fabric of reality to open up a dimension to the, or I open up a portal to the dark dimension. I am so excited for Dormammu to come back.
Yeah, I think giving him his time in the sun again is going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So this is one thing, and this has nothing to do with my complaints about Doctor Strange, but I kind of wanted to pick your guys' brains about this. How do we feel about them kind of announcing these big characters in post-credit scenes with major actors? Specifically, we have this post-credit scene with Charlize Theron and the post-credit scene to Eternals, where they kind of announced that Harry Styles was joining the MCU. And I thought to myself, after watching both of these movies, when will the sequel come out? When am I going to see these major actors again? Like, I'm excited to see what Harry Styles brings, but is that going to be 5 years from now? Is he still going to want to play that character in 5 years? Like, it feels a little odd for them to be doing these super hard string alongs with actors specifically. I just kind of wanted your guys' thoughts on that, because it is a bit of a weird thing that they've done twice now. Three times, I mean, if you count Kang.
MCU just has a formula, and they have communication with the actors to get it done. And I think they just have a good track record with it. And if we got to wait, we got to wait. But they're intentionally going with the system where they're making these properties feel like issues of a comic book, and that's just kind of the price that comes with it. Sometimes it's pop in, sometimes you wait 5-6 years to see them again, and as long as it's good, you know, the formula is working, so keep it going.
Yeah, I think it makes for really, really exciting moments in the theater, especially for like that opening night crowd. With Eternals, I feel like it's everything's kind of up in the air given the reception to that movie. Not that it was terrible, I just think the vast majority kind of feel like it was on the lower end of the Marvel movies, you know, for better or for worse. So it's tough to say, even with Pip the Troll, Patton Oswalt providing the motion capture and the voice for Pip the Troll there. Like, I recall people being a little unsettled by some of the quality of the CGI there. So I wonder, I haven't rewatched Eternals in quite some time, but I wonder if that's something that they've kind of cleaned up. I've heard about them altering the quality of some of the movies post-release. I think I heard about it most recently with Spider-Man No Way Home. Like, they actually have done some things to the background since it's actually even been released physically. Like, if you get it digitally now, you'll notice some subtle differences and touch-ups and stuff like that in the background. So apart from that, I'm cool with it, especially if it makes for with the case of Clea, that exciting of a moment. And the fact that they say Doctor Strange will return, I think they're all in on Clea and her being involved in his future adventures. So I don't think she's going anywhere. Harry Styles, I think, could be a different story because, like I said, that we don't really have a clear future for the Eternals in any way, shape, or form. But we shall see.
Yeah, for sure. It was just something I wanted to pick your brain out about that I didn't hear quite as much, because Harry Styles also has something other than an acting career. Who knows where he's going to be when they want to film that movie? And
the acting career is the newer part of it.
Oh, for sure.
So I was when did he start acting?
He showed up in Dunkirk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then two of the times that I've gone to see Doctor Strange, there's been this trailer with Florence Pugh. And I just got to say, I love Florence Pugh before she ever showed up as Yelena. She's been in a lot of great movies. Midsommar comes to mind, but they're going to be in a movie together called, Don't Worry, Darling. And it's got Chris Pine. It's got Olivia Wilde. She's directing, and it looks really, really riveting and kind of bonkers. And I'm super excited for that. And just kind of going off on a tangent now, but it's interesting how often, as Marvel's collected more and more of this talented cast, how often these actors end up working together, because I was just watching the 2013 version of Old Boy, the American remake by Spike Lee, and it had Thanos and our Scarlet Witch, Elizabeth Olsen, in that. And if you haven't seen that movie, I would recommend the original over the Spike Lee version, but that is just a very, very out there movie. And
all right, interesting to see. I need the meme of I don't even know who you are and just cutting to something from that movie.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what I was thinking too. You took everything from me. Anyway, trying to think if there's anything else I have to say about... Yeah, just excited to see the future for Doctor Strange as well as America Chavez. And nice to see Wong finally get some respect from Doctor Strange there at the end with just the, you know, it's custom to bow to the Sorcerer Supreme. So we know that Wong is our Sorcerer Supreme in this universe. I was a little miffed when that first became a thing, but it makes all the sense in the world.
Like, I just want to know what the Sorcerer Supreme was doing in a cage match in China during Shang-Chi.
Well, we might find out in She-Hulk.
That's true. We have also kind of dodged the question of what we think about this animated universe. Is it the Spider-Verse or not?
It didn't look like the Spider-Verse to me. It didn't look like the same style of animation. It kind of echoed it a little bit, but having seen it three times now, like the musical choice in the background made me feel like they were going for something a little bit different. It definitely looked cel-shaded. It definitely looked like they were doing that effect where they kind of like slowed down the framework to where it kind of like made it feel like a flip book, like you were flipping through the pages of a comic book. But those are my main takeaways. I don't think it's supposed to be the same verse that we have our Miles Morales Spider-Man living in, but I could be wrong, and I'd happy to be wrong.
I felt like it was closer to that than it was the What If, and that was the important distinction for me.
That's fair.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know if I want to see him cross over, though. I would almost be happy with keeping my eggs and bacon separate on this one. They're both good, but I don't know if I need to see, you know, Doctor Strange come into Across the Spider-Verse or anything along those lines. I think I'm, you know, acknowledging that the multiverse is there and that that's universe 444 and we're in 616. I'm okay with acknowledging they could cross, but I don't know if I need to see them cross by any extent of it.
I just need to see Sony give all the rights back to Marvel.
Unfortunately, I don't think that's happening anytime soon. But
because the Into the Spider-Verse, which was just a bunch of nerds putting a film together that Sony just happened to approve, and the PlayStation video games are the two solid things that have come out of Sony.
Yeah. I liked the first Venom, okay. It was like fun for like being a B movie, but it was definitely something that I laughed at, I think, more than the filmmakers intended for us to laugh at.
Like I said, it's my favorite Marvel rom-com.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. I won't say anything about the sequel because I don't have anything nice to say about the sequel. And I have not seen Morbius, but the reception to Morbius has not made me like super motivated to check it out. So
I just saw a funny meme. That was like when you realize that the only thing that pushes bad Marvel movies to get a sequel is the memes posted about it. And then it was like when you realize that you just caused a Morbius sequel and it's Anakin going, what have I done?
Well, I mean, at this point, who knows what's crossing over, but we did have an Easter egg of Miles Morales' graffiti showed up in Chip and Dale as we're talking about the multiverse.
That's right.
It is all connected in some way, in some form.
Now this just makes me go back to Patton Oswalt's filibuster that he had in Parks and Recreation, where he just basically talks about everything being connected, and it feels like we're headed towards that. So good on him. Good on him.
I joked at the top, Disney is giving us everything under the sun these days.
True. Under the twin suns of
Except
Tatooine.
For Young Justice.
Right.
That's our one hope.
Help me, Young Justice. You're my only hope. All right.
Help me, Nightwing.
Now that the jokes are getting that bad, I think we're running towards the end of the tape here.
I think we're kind of at the fried end here.
All right, gentlemen.
I'm very excited for this burrito I'm about to go eat.
All right. Well, in addition to your burrito, what else do you want to let the people know that you have going on in your life, Zuhair?
I don't know. I'm just enjoying content. I haven't watched the newest episode of Spy X Family, but again, go watch that if you need a new anime because it's so funny. Yeah, guys, I'm just going with the flow right now. Where as soon as Young Justice is wrapped up, we're talking about kind of hitting some of the projects that we've been wanting to go that have already come out. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff just in the works right now, so stay tuned.
Andrew?
As always, follow us on all of our social medias, Instagram, Animation Deliberation, Facebook is the Animation Deliberation page, and Twitter, Animation Delib 1. I recently decided I was just going to start throwing all the pictures from our Instagram onto the Twitter every week, so that will be nice. Another place, and I'm going to start kind of maybe tweeting out a little bit more as things happen. I've been trying to retweet news. I sent out a tweet that said, hey, we're recording on a Sunday, just to kind of let you guys know, hey, you can expect an episode before work on Tuesday or something along those lines. Just if you want a little bit more of a lackadaisical nature, I'll be throwing stuff up on there. But yeah, as always, I will continue to be here until I get kicked off for making bad music jokes. I don't know.
Nah, I don't see that happening anytime soon. But yeah, thank you both for being here. Thank you for your efforts and contributing to the show. And thank you to the listeners. I will encourage you, check out our various social medias and please share the show. Give us a like, give us a rating and review. 5 stars would certainly be appreciated, but whatever you think we are deserving of, any review will definitely help our visibility and our numbers on the charts. It's exciting to have the growth that we've had and the guests with the industry professionals that we've been able to have. And I just hope this trajectory continues to go to infinity and beyond.
And that's one thing I will say as well. That's the biggest free thing you guys can do to help us is leaving a rating and review. It's that easy as just clicking and typing in, you know, something you guys enjoy about us. Like I said, it's completely free and it's the best way to also let us know, hey, we're doing something right by getting those ratings and reviews. So if you haven't, please do it for us, I suppose. I don't want to sound like I'm begging, but it's just, easy sometimes.
This is a labor of love. So yeah, getting that positive affirmation definitely makes it all worth it. And if we can get more opportunities, it's going to keep us here coming back every week, sometimes multiple times a week. So yeah, one more time, I do want to plug, we mentioned that Instagram cartoon I did. I would have liked it if it got a little more interaction than it did, but you know, I'll take what I can get. But check out my artwork at jscotty4real. That's number 4, R-E-E-L as in film reel. And then, I'm also appearing on Bingers Assemble, as I mentioned, the coverage for Jurassic Park, all in preparation for Jurassic World Dominion hitting theaters June 9th. That will do it for me this week. Thank you for tuning in. That's TOONIN.
Stay whelmed.
Disney's going to keep carrying us with their muscles.
Thank you for listening to the Animation Deliberation Podcast, a proud member of the Stranded Panda Network. If you would like to contact us, you can email animationdeliberationpodcast@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at @animationdelib1. For this and other great shows, you can visit strandedpanda.com or join the great community that is the Stranded Panda Chat Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/svchat. Tune in next time, and remember, stay whelmed.